We have a natural and spiritual connection to the land that goes way back.
Hi there, and welcome back to another episode of Sustaining with Shayna, a show where I will share all the amazing and exciting works of sustainability happening across the eastern foothills of the Appalachian Mountains to the lush farmlands of southeastern Pennsylvania. By celebrating our community, we can help to bridge the gap between local and international sustainability endeavors. Today's guest is Christian Riddick. Christian is an urban gardener to table educator and also the host and creator of the Afrobeats platform. We talked about his experience as an urban gardener in a big city like Washington, D.C., and the joys and challenges they pose. We also talked about his online platform and how Afrobeats was designed to teach his audience to grow food in small spaces, and then also turn what they've grown in their backyard or in container gardens into culturally inspired dishes. We also explored how race and racism play a role in gardening and agriculture, and the work Christian is doing to promote gardening in his own community. If you would like to learn more about gardening and the many benefits, check out the weekly Ingest newsletter published on June 29th. The newsletter can be found under the resource blog tab over on the Sustaining with Shayna website. Before we meet Christian, hear a word about our sponsor. Happy Plastic Free July, everyone! We're excited to have FD Market sponsoring us through the month of July. FD Market is a small, sustainable, everyday goods shop located in Emmaus, Pennsylvania. Their goal is to provide affordable and practical sustainability products and resources to their community. Better yet, their products are ethically and as locally sourced as possible. Products like alternatives to plastic wrap and storage containers, to shampoo bars and toothpaste tablets. Earlier this year, I was excited to learn about FD Market, a zero-waste home goods store that was finally coming to our community. It gives me hope that people now have the opportunity to go sustainable and support a local business at the same time. I'm most excited about trying to reduce my plastic waste consumption in the bathroom with all the products we use are stored in bottles made with terrible petrochemicals. To start, I've tried the shampoo bars that FD Market sells. Their shampoo bars left my hair feeling silky, smooth, and fresh. Do you want to give FD Market a try and begin living a zero-waste lifestyle? Well, you're in luck. As part of a special promotion, you can get 15% off your next purchase with using the promo code SustainingWithShayna. And that is spelled SustainingWithShayna. SHANA. All one word, no underscores or spaces. This promo code can be used on their online store as well as in person. If you don't live in eastern Pennsylvania, don't worry. FD Market can ship your order right to your front door. Welcome back to another episode of Sustaining with Shayna. And and another exciting episode in the series talking about agriculture and urban gardening and the Black experience. And today I have another podcaster on the show. Christian, please introduce yourself to the listeners.
Hello, hello. My name is Christian Riddick. I kind of put myself under the umbrella of a garden table educator. So I teach people how to connect back to the land through the power of plants, pretty much, teaching them how to garden at home in small spaces, kind of creating these plant-based dishes and also healing through different plants and herbalisms, things like that.
And also, can you talk a little bit more about your Afrobeats podcast too?
Sure, yeah. So the Afrobeats podcast is kind of me trying to get my own fix on things. I really wanted to understand more about my culture, but I felt like it was overwhelming because with Black culture, a lot is like hidden and twisted up. And I thought, hey, I need to find like one specific avenue I can kind of like go through to kind of get that information out. And so I started off with gardening and food and using that as a way to connect back to my culture, basically. Mm-hmm. And so on the Afrobeats podcast, we're basically having conversations with different chefs, you know, people who are plant lovers, just people who are farmers and kind of in that garden table space, and people who are trying to do the same thing, connect back to the land and learning from their experiences, basically.
So with all of that said, what is there something that like inspired you to start the platform and also inspired you to be an educator when it comes to plants and gardening?
For sure. So I actually started, I think I'm about in my third year of kind of like being in this space and starting the brand. So Afrobeats actually kind of started off of me doing a service project. I was in this program called City Year. And they're basically like a nonprofit who goes around. They usually serve in schools, but they also have the kind of physical volunteer work that they do. And so we were doing, you know, this is an AmeriCorps program, so it's like a year of service. And we were doing a Martin Luther King Day service project. And my project just happened to be in this community in Back Bay, Boston. And it was this Puerto Rican neighborhood, senior citizens who lived in this complex. And we were basically making soup kits for them. And so we had all the different vegetables, the cuisines, the products that they use to make their soups and their culture. And we were just putting those together. But I actually met an entrepreneur named Josh there. And Josh owns this company called Fresh Truck. So Fresh Truck converts, you know, these old school buses into produce markets and basically goes into, you know, food apartheids, food deserts, whatever you want to call it. And kind of serves the community through these produce markets. There's a lot of communities who just don't have access to fresh fruits and veggies and things like that. And so this was a way to kind of like combat that. And so I was just amazed by this. I wanted to learn more. And he, as I learned, you know, what he was doing, what his mission was, I went deeper in myself and I started researching on people like, you know, Ron Finley, the Gangster Gardener, just people who looks like me who were in this space and trying to find a solution. And I was like, hey, I'm just gonna like start growing some shit one day. And I just got good at it at one point. I started, you know, really, really bad at first. I mean, like everything I touched like immediately got killed. And but I got eventually some production. And you know, I remember my first vegetable was this like radish, like the size of my thumb. And I got really excited about it. I started growing more and more and more. And people were like, hey, are you like, you know, vegetarian? Are you vegan now or whatever? Because you're eating a lot of vegetables is because that's what I was growing. And I was like, oh yeah, I could do that for a couple weeks, that vegan thing. And so I tried it, felt like I had like superpowers basically because I was eating so much fruit and veggies at the first time. And after a while, I just kind of stuck with it. And so Afrobeats was just my documentation of that journey of connecting back to the land, connecting back to the culture, you know, through the lens of food.
Yeah. It's exciting to see kind of the progress that's happened and changed over time. And speaking from like my own personal experience, I've used to work as a kind of like a sustainable agriculture educator at a summer camp the summers between college when I was still doing my undergrad. And what I know now compared to what I knew like that first summer is like completely different, and like knowing different things as far as like when you're supposed to water, how much you're supposed to water, to what nutrients the plant needs because of the color of its leaves. Like those simple things are so important. So one of the things that you mentioned is speaking from like a ba black cultural experience, and how there's kind of this disconnect to the land and nature. So you had an episode recently, I think it was episode 29 to be exact, where you talk about this disconnection with the land. Can you talk a little bit more about that for listeners that may have not heard you speak about that or don't currently follow you yet?
For sure, for sure. I actually have, hold on one second, I have the book right here. So the book is called Black Nature, Four Centuries of African American Nature Poetry, and it's edited by Camille Dungy. And basically, it's a book of just Black people talking about their relationship with nature and the relationship, with everything that has to do with gardening, just being outdoors. And a lot of our history with nature is it's wrapped up in trauma, but it's also wrapped up in power too, because we come from a people as a culture who have been masters of the land for a long, long time, even from, starting our ancestry in Africa. We were growing like okra, we were growing yams, and those are the things we brought over with us through the trauma of the slave trade. So like even though all those things were going on, we had the peace of mind to really still connect back to the land. And so my episode with that was just saying like, hey, like people, the systems at B would have us believe that, we're people of, concrete and like brick, and we're only city people. But that's, the furthest thing from the truth. Like we have a natural and spiritual connection to the land that goes way back in our ancestry. And so that was kind of restating like, hey, don't say you have, a black thumb or brown thumb. You're just basically out of practice. Like this is in your bloodline. This is something that is within you already. And so this book was something I just really wanted to talk about and like share with people, because it shows all the different perspectives. It showed that, even through slavery and different things like that, people still have that connection to the land, and we still do, and we're starting to get back in a lot of ways.
Yeah, actually, I think I've came across that book within the last few weeks, since there's an influencer on Instagram that started this intersectional environmentalism platform, and that was one of the books that she suggested on her list of like combating racism and the climate crisis or environmental injustice together.
For sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So with your experiences as a gardener, to a podcaster, to an educator, and also a vegan, I would love for you to share more about your experience with that, because I think there's kind of a certain stigma of veganism in this country, and it's more diverse than we realize it is.
Oh, absolutely. Like, yeah, when you think of veganism, you think of white, like hippie type of person. First of all, veganism, well, it didn't always have the name of veganism, but it's been around for a long time. When you look at Jamaican culture, Rastafarian culture, that's pretty much like vegan in a lot of ways. The Tao movement, there's cultures that have been doing it for a while. So this white ness around veganism that is just very like stereotypical, like they belong to PETA, like throwing blood on people, like that's one way of seeing it, but that's not the whole picture. Black Americans, we're like one of the largest groups of vegans right now, actually, when you look at it statistically. Our group, because a lot of it is health reasons, even though it's a very much an animal movement, we are leading that transitioning within our culture. And so when you talk about veganism in only a white lens, only you're talking about a very like small fraction of what that actually is made of. I employ everybody to at least try it, you know, for a week and see how they feel. And for me, it was just like life changing because it not only made me think about my health in a different way, it also made me think about the environment, how animals are treated and how that's all connected in one. It's not like one thing is being affected by that choice. There's just so many things. You have, like you said, the environment, you have the animals, and then you have your own health. And what I've learned is that there's a synergy between all three of those things, which are the main factors of why people choose this lifestyle. And once you recognize that everything is connected, you have more of appreciation for those things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think even with you saying that, I think we get caught up in this consumerist kind of culture too, that's also very white dominated, where it's like we have to have all the answers before we start, or we have to go out and buy all these elaborate things to become vegan. And as somebody like myself, who's kind of like sort of getting on that path towards full veganism, I mean, it's hard, but I think it's a lot easier than we realize. And also another thing to your point is I actually read a statistic that similar to what you mentioned, maybe it was the same one, like less than a week ago, about it's significantly higher that Black people are, a significantly higher amount are vegans compared to white people.
For sure. Yeah. It's just something that we're starting to realize in our culture, because when you look at other issues, you know, there's more Black people dying from like, you know, food-related diseases or diseases that are preventable by like a proper diet than there are, you know, Black people being killed by cops. Unfortunately, it doesn't seem like it, you know, in this time period, but that's the truth. You know, that is happening on a much larger scale and something we need to pay attention about. And so when you have fast food places in some of our communities and, you know, these dialysis centers and things that are getting popped out that are not for our good, there's no wonder why people are, you know, turning to that specific type of lifestyle.
Yeah, absolutely. So kind of expounding on that, is there any advice you have that you've kind of found successful on a path towards becoming a vegan, as well as following you on Instagram, I see that you kind of have your own garden at home, and what things people can do and simple things people can do right in their homes to kind of start both of those journeys.
For sure. My first advice and tip would be kind of keep your mind open on the possibilities through the vegan lifestyle or the plant-based lifestyle. My depth of dishes and different foods have only expanded since I've become a vegan, because I recognize that there are, you know, 40,000 different types of edible plants over that, like way over the top. Like there's so many different plants and things you can eat and, you know, exchange with, like, you know, when I didn't start eating flowers until, you know, I became vegan, things like that, like I wouldn't consider, but it expands everything. And once you make that connection with gardening too, it's really about, you know, you put all this effort into this growing this thing, like growing a tomato takes a lot of effort, and, you know, growing eggplant, things like that takes a lot of effort. And so once you grow something, you really appreciate it for how much work it takes, and you have more connection to that process. And you'll really want to find out, hey, what is the best way I can utilize, you know, I put my blood, sweat, and tears into this thing. Like, how can I really utilize this? It just gives you more of appreciation for food. And yeah, I think it's about educating yourself and just try swapping out stuff that's in your favorite meals, and you'd be surprised with what you can create, basically.
Mm-hmm. So with what you've like grown over the years, mm-hmm. and especially since becoming vegan, what's probably your favorite, what's your favorite part, or what's like your favorite dish that you've made from what you've grown?
I'm in the process of growing Scotch bonnet peppers. which is very close to a habanero and pepper, except for it's like 100 times better. It has like a lot more flavor, and it's hot. It's really hot, but it also has like a fruitiness to it. And so I like using that pepper in like veggie patties, like Jamaican patties. I like using them in like different stews. I use it in like jollof recipes, like the jollof rice. Those are like a couple things. Those have been my favorites lately, but I'm just continuing to expand and growing that. I really want to grow Kalaloo, which is like this very like hearty green, and like it's using Caribbean culture a lot, and they eat it with like a ton of stuff. And so as I think about how I grow as a gardener, I want to continue to incorporate those cultural crops too, because that also brings a connection to history and to the land. I say that like food and gardening are the best ways to connect to the past, because you're getting the recipes from the food. You're learning about, why do people grow certain things, together. Like right now I have a pot of kind of like veggies that includes eggplant, parsley, and basil. And when I think about those things, I'm like, why do these things grow well together? Why can't I put these things together? Those are all from the same part of the world typically. I think about it like Italian food, and those all grow around each other. So it makes sense that that's the cuisine, and that's what's used in a lot of Italian dishes. And so it's just crazy how it kind of makes you think about different vegetables in different countries and the history behind those things.
Yeah, because I think you posted an Instagram story video or something a couple weeks ago where you had corn growing and then it was pole beans, and then what was the third plant that went with it?
It was corn, it was like a summer squash, and then the beans. Yeah, the three sisters. And that comes from like indigenous Native American culture. And that was actually, I work at the Washington Youth Garden located in the Arboretum. And that was our farmer in there kind of like introducing and showing us how these things work together. And so basically, you want to start off with the corn, because the corn is kind of the pole that the beans will wrap around, and it supports that. The beans also provide like a ton of nutrients for everything in the area, and so they're helping each other. And then the squash kind of helps to keep like different pests and things away. And so there's this synergy between these three crops and items that the Native Americans who created that system just like they just knew like those things go together, and they paid attention and they saw how nature could work with each other and just be one in that way. And so I like that video specifically because our farmer Xavier was saying all these things are usually found on one plate. And so when you think about, I think it's like some of those like succotash dishes, then in a lot of like Mexican foods, like you usually have some type of bean, you have some type of corn, there's usually squash in there. All those things work together well on a plate because they also grow around each other very, very well. So that's another example of that.
Yeah. Well, and when you first posted that, the just it, I don't know. I guess it's just because, like, not necessarily learning how to garden and growing up with the land like that, that when you posted that, it blew my mind. I was like, wow, I am growing beans the wrong way.
There's so many ways to do it. There's so many strategies and everything, but they definitely have it right. I'm trying to do it myself because I just focus mostly on container garden. So I'm like, how can I downsize this and make this work at home? It's so cool. It's awesome.
Yeah. So with living in like Metro DC, what would you say is probably like the biggest drawback or the hardest part about this? Now, whether it's limited in space or even like does the city on a municipal level even like encourage it?
Yeah, I think a couple of those things you mentioned are definitely challenging. When you think about space in the city, the problem is there's buildings and things you tend to be higher, and so they cast a certain shade. So I have like a huge backyard in the back of the apartment, and I can only really put like kind of like tropical like forest type plants back there because there's just so much shade. Like it's pretty much a jungle back there, even though I live in the city. The way they put trees up, I just don't get enough sun to get the food production. I can put herbs, I can put leafy greens back there, But if I want to grow a tomato back there, I'm not going to have a lot of luck, you know? And so thinking about that, you have to think about lighting because of the shade of the area. You do have to think about some like, you know, pollutants and things like that. I live not too far away from like North Capitol Street, and it's a busy street. Like you can literally see the Capitol like from where I live. Mm-hmm. And so you got all kinds of stuff that like flying around. You got urban like tumbleweed and things like that you have to worry about. But other than that, there's still ways. There are also benefits to growing in the city too. For instance, if you're growing containers, I don't deal with nearly as many pests as they do at the garden in the arboretum. And so there's some control in that instance. One thing that is challenging is if you're growing in a container, there's not that network of nutrients you get from other parts of the land. So if you're growing like straight into the ground, you have some trees, you have some grass and things like that that work together harmoniously that like allows you to pull more nutrients from the ground. But if you're growing in a container, that plant that's in that container is sucking up all the nutrients. And so you're constantly having to kind of replace that in a way. But besides that, there's also some benefits. Yeah, the city doesn't care sometimes. So like you can get away with a lot if you're strategic about it. Like, I see people grow sunflowers and traffic mediums and things like that. Mm-hmm. And so it's really cool. Actually, DC is actually a pretty good urban garden city. If you walk through some of these neighborhoods, there's people growing all kinds of stuff in all kinds of ways. And it's actually really beautiful to see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think as you were saying that, I saw something on Facebook a couple weeks ago, and this might have been like right after George Floyd's murder, where I think it was a Black Lives Matter protest, and it might have even been Minnesota, and there were people that were taking out the ornamental flowers in front of the state capitol and actually putting like fresh produce in instead. So like plants that you could harvest food from. And it's just like, imagine the idea of like having municipal plants or like municipal gardens that instead of it being ornamental flowers that serve no purpose, that it could be replaced with vegetation that serves many purposes.
Yeah, that would be incredible. And I think there's definitely people looking creatively to figure out ways to do that.
Yeah. And I feel like a situation like that could solve maybe not all these problems in cities, but it could at least help to reduce some food insecurities and maybe supplement some food deserts that happen in different parts of cities. I don't know. I feel like we need to rewrite policies to kind of make those things possible, for sure.
Yeah, I definitely think the first step is starting at home, though, and like really building that community. I noticed like the more I like garden out in the front, that's the benefit to doing like a front yard garden. People mm-hmm. are always wondering like what you're up to. They're just like, people are naturally nosy and you can kind of share with them. Like my neighbors, I have conversations with my neighbors. The first conversation we had was about, you know, plants, and I gave them some like cuttings of like coleus I was growing and different things like that. And we build a bond that way in a community that way.
So. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a exciting way to build relationships with other people. So kind of going off of that and then bouncing back to what we talked about with your one episode that you had with relationship to land, what is your personal relationship with the land? Like how would you describe it?
That's a good question. I think I would describe it as like a spiritual experience. A way to like ground myself into what's important. When you start to grow and then start to let yourself just be around nature and be in the moment of taking care of somebody that's not yourself. And I say somebody like it's a real person, but like in a lot of ways, plants are like living beings as well. So I think about it grounds me in just being a better person, I feel like, and really understanding kind of like where we come from in our place and everything. When you're gardening, you take time to be still and you take time to focus on the least important things, or not, you focus on not the, you know, day-to-day life things. And so it's a way to stay focused. It's a way to connect with people, and it's a way to be empathetic. And I just feel like a good person, and I feel nicer, and I feel like talking to people, you know, when I'm gardening. It just puts me in a better headspace for sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's, for me, it feels really therapeutic to be out in the garden. And actually, somebody told me fairly recently, and I never realized this, but there's like microbes in the soil that are actually good for us that get absorbed by our hands and feet when we're in the warmer out gardening, and how that's like healthy for our brain and all these different things. And I never thought about gardening to that depth and how much of an impact that makes. And it was interesting how you also mentioned that it kind of allows you to be more empathetic and build relationships with other people. And it's interesting you say that, because one of the other guests I have on for this series of the podcast, she represents the North Philly Peace Park. And it's interesting where it's an urban space, it's an urban garden, almost an urban farm, but also on the property, they have these conflict resolutions that happen all the time, or people will walk to the park and have their disputes or disagreements in the middle of the garden rather than having it on the sidewalk or in their homes. And it's allowed for a more peaceful way of dealing with situations.
That's good. Yeah. I was a teacher like about a year ago, actually, coming up. And, you know, when kids were having discipline problems in schools, like they would actually take them out to the garden and like do some hands-on work with them. And that really made all the difference. Like they were just so much more calm. They could actually focus on something that was not like whatever problems they were going through. And especially for kids, like it's therapeutic to just be in the ground. Like sometimes I'll just go outside, even on like my porch, and just like not wear shoes. Like we were always told growing up, like make sure you wear shoes, you might cut your feet or something like that. I used to naturally do that as a kid. Mm-hmm. Now I'm getting back to it and realize like, wow, like it's a different connection, like actually being connected to the land, like through your feet rather than like through your shoes. It just feels different.
Yeah, I was always the kid that when summer would hit, that I would hardly ever wear shoes when I was home. So I really resonate with that for sure. But also a point that you made there about how having worked in a school and taking kids out to a garden to resolve a conflict, I can't imagine if that was a program that existed in every school, and how starting that out with kids at a very young age, I can't imagine what that could mean for just resolving an issue, to people developing this relationship with their environment, whether it's natural or not. Like so many things there are so positive, even from like a developmental perspective.
For sure. Yeah, I find that kids in the garden is like necessary in like curriculums. That's what I do when I work at the Washington Youth Garden, where, you know, some of these kids, like I said, live in those urban environments, they don't see much grass at all, some of them. And so being able to take a little piece of that with them at home is like super important and super effective to like connecting them to their actual food. Like the first time I saw a kid taste like a real raspberry, not just from like the store, but actually like growing off the plant, like it was just mind blowing. Like they were so excited to eat raspberries and like kale. And it's just like, you know, unheard of from the areas that some of them were from. But when they have access to it and they understand the process of it, they'll eat it. And it's a beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I resonate with that too, because the summers that I was teaching sustainable agriculture, there were so many firsts for a lot of kids that I experienced with them. And they came from varying backgrounds. So it wasn't just inner city, but it was also suburban or rural communities. But whether it's from picking produce for the first time and actually seeing where it comes from, to that zucchini they just picked, to learning how to cut food for the first time by themselves, and some of them are like almost a teenager and not having the ability and the freedom to do that. And then as soon as we were done making the recipe that we used with produce we harvested directly from the garden, the look in their eyes when they go to eat that delicious treat that they just made, it's and for them it's almost like life-changing.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, you definitely see the light in their eyes. It's just a different taste. It's a different feel. And I mean, you're just getting it that energy from like the natural source. And so all those things that were important, you know, we need light, you know, we need water. All those things like come from those organic, raw fruits. So yeah, it's kind of crazy. Like I always think about how much goes into the plant, and no wonder they're just so good for us. You know, that's one thing gardening has taught me is like, wow, how much sun did it take to grow this, tomato, this cucumber? How much water did I have to put in there? We're all that love and care we put into those things, like we're eating all that. That energy has to go somewhere, and that's all good energy. And yeah, it really makes you appreciate things when you get your hands in the ground and really be a part of that process.
Yeah, and it's interesting when you kind of harvest things for the first time that you would necessarily buy in the store all the time. Because like right now, I am house sitting for friends that have this huge property. It's like just shy of 30 acres, not that far from where I live, but they have these 30-year-old blueberry bushes, and I love blueberries. And I've eaten blueberries so much over the years, but to pick fresh blueberries with no treatment of the plant at all, just it naturally growing by itself, the sweetness that comes from it is so. It's not comparable to what you buy in the grocery store.
It's that's how I feel about like tomatoes. That's how I feel about pretty much everything. Like it's hard for me to buy like herbs now, like because they're so easy to grow indoors. Like, and I just like to cut them fresh and like go out and like do my thing with them.
Yeah, it definitely makes the biggest difference. So kind of before we start to wrap up, and I have some fun questions to ask you before we sign off. Do you have any other things you would like to add?
I just say just start growing by any means, especially now that we're in, the pandemic season, and starting to let up a little bit, but I would say, get connected in that way. I have like videos on like YouTube on how like if you don't know how much water something has, you can make like self-watering containers and things like that. And yeah, I would just say just check me out. I'm willing to teach and like help people out as they go along their journey and kind of go on that journey with me.
Yeah, and I think the biggest thing, like you said, it's just, and we talked about earlier, is that you can't, I guess you can't get bogged down with all the these different things when it starts, and when you start to garden, and just realizing try something small. And see where that goes.
Yeah, because I started like in a window. That's all I had access to. I didn't have access to any land, and Even when I didn't have no clue what I was doing, I still managed to find a way to like grow eggplants and tomatoes in the window. I was like growing in these like tiny 6-inch pots, which is like barely any space for like those types of things. But you still get production, and you keep learning and learning, and you just keep growing. It's the process.
Yeah, and actually I do have something to ask as far as what you mentioned that when you talked about how you started a garden just on one windowsill, did you grow up gardening at all? I'm curious if like what was your experience before that?
My experience prior to gardening was like every time around the holidays when I was younger, like Christmas, Thanksgiving, I would go down to my grandmother's house. She lived in North Carolina, and we had these amazing like dishes. Like we had like sweet potato pie, we had like collard greens, mac and cheese, things like that. And all things I knew from there were always fresh. Like we actually went out and got yams from the garden, We got collard greens from the garden and like brought them in and washed them and helped prep them and things like that. We churned our own ice cream at one point, things like that. And so from an early age, I knew what fresh food tastes like. I kind of lost it over time and then kind of got back as I got older and like I started cooking more. But that was my first experience. But before that, honestly, I had a lot of experience that happened in a short period of time. It was like a 3-year kind of like turnover for me, like knowing nothing about gardening to me now teaching other people about gardening. And now I'm like pretty much obsessed with it. And I do it for a career, at the Washington Youth Garden. And then I also do it with my platform, Afrobeats, as well. So I'm just happy to be in the space and happy to keep learning and sharing my thoughts with other people.
Yeah, and it's been exciting to kind of follow your journey and to see what you've learned from other people and also mistakes that you've made along the way. So my first quirky, fun question, I guess, to ask is, and I always love to hear what every guest's thought is on this, but if you could define sustainability, what would it be?
If I had to define, for me, sustainability is about giving back to whatever you're taking from or repurposing that to help somebody else. And so when I think of sustainability, I think of like composting, for example, the process to grow all these different types of foods and things like that. Like, how can I use every part of this plant to give life to something else? And so when I think about sustainability, what am I giving life to? And making sure I'm not wasting as much as possible.
So if you could take that definition of sustainability and put it into one word, what would it be?
Word. I would say repurpose. Yeah, repurpose everything.
I've over the last few episodes, it's interesting to hear some of the different things that some guests have said. One was just simply sustain, to another one said green. So it's interesting to see what people's responses are. Yeah. So, as being a vegan, what's your favorite vegan dish?
That was a hard one, man. There's just so many good one out of this. Favorite vegan dish. There's this place called Farewell in DC. And it's basically, they used to be, I think it's called like sticky buns or something like that. It used to be just a bakery, but they made like a kind of like a diner situation. It's an all vegan diner. They do baked goods, they do, breakfast foods, all kinds of stuff. And they have this just Reuben made with like tempeh and like sweet potato fries. That's probably pretty up there for me. And their cookies are literally cracked. So if you're in DC, go to Farewell. Like it was a problem. Like when I was going through the stresses of teaching, I was up in every day. Like it was wild. Yeah. Definitely the vegan Reuben is like perfect.
That sounds really good. But if you had to like make something at home, what would you say is your favorite like vegan dish that you've made?
Something that I've made at home. My solid go-to maybe like during the winter. It's called Caldo Verde. It's like a Portuguese Cape Verdean dish, and it's basically a soup with like kale, like a plant-based sausage, and the base is like potatoes. It's like a potato kale soup mixed with like I put butter beans in it, kale, plant-based sausage. That's really good, very hearty, and yeah, it'll go a long way.
That sounds really good. I was like hanging on to every word as you were describing that.
Yeah, the recipe is somewhere on Instagram. I'm getting back to the food blog kind of things of what I do. I've been focused on garden a lot, but I'll definitely get back to that. So if you want the recipe, just let me know.
Ooh, I would totally be down for that recipe.
I got you.
But for me, I guess for a while and kind of since starting this slow journey to becoming a vegan, I've been really craving falafels. And so I have some of the ingredients at home to make it, but I don't have quite like everything. So it's getting to the point where it's like, okay, I need to go to the store to buy this stuff to like satisfy this craving.
Yeah, the spice is definitely key in those types of dishes, but yeah, if you get some good stuff, yeah, for sure.
So if you could, I guess switching gears here. So if you could, think of a sustainability brand that you've. Sorry, I was like losing my train of thought as I was saying that. What is your favorite sustainability brand if you have one?
Sustainability brand who's doing it well. I can't think of a specific brand. There's a small business in DC called Eat for Beauty DC, and they're big into sustainability when they have events. They're very much about looking at food through like a holistic lens. And when they have food events, and they typically do like raw foods, they do foods that kind of like energize you. They use a lot of sustainable materials. So they have very like compostable like plates and like utensils and things like that. They're very, they always have like a compost section for what they do. And so I think they're doing it well when I think about sustainability. They're always on point.
And as you're describing that, I'm thinking the fact of it being plastic free July, and that would be a, like a perfect business to highlight for that for sure. So in addition to all the amazing work you could that you do right now, if you could have a dream job in sustainability, what would it be?
Dream job sustainability. I would, I kind of like doing what I do now, more composting for sure. I would love to like we call it like black gold in like the garden community. Like compost is so rich in like nutrients, and it really motivates me to continue to do that. So I'm trying to actually get a compost system started at home. We have a little bit at the youth garden. We also do worm bins, which is cool because you almost have like pets at home, and they kind of like decompose of different scraps, veggies and things you use. So I think I would do something if I was wanted to do a sustainability dream job, it would have to be something like composting for sure. I think the process is so interesting. It's just super valuable, especially in the city.
And as you're describing that, that makes me think of like municipal composting programs and all the possibilities that could be endless there.
Yeah, we have a ton of composting services in the city. We have this organization called Compost Cab, where you keep your scraps and you give them your scraps like once a month and they drop off compost for you. That's a great one. I like that one as a sustainable brand as well.
Any last thoughts before we wrap up?
Yeah, I think that's it. I mean, I would say if you're looking to get into the growing space, like start with your area first. If you're trying to build a community around it, there's already somebody in your area, I promise, that's already growing. Find out who's growing, connect with them, and make your garden seen so you can connect to others on your street and just bring as many people as possible. And try to eat more plants because it's better for the environment overall.
I'm better for us.
And better for us and
Yeah.
the animals, all
Yeah.
those things.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Christian. It's been a pleasure speaking with you and hearing from your experiences in urban gardening and educating the next generation of farmers as well.
For sure. Yeah, no problem. Follow me on Instagram at afro underscore beets. Beets is spelled like a vegetable, or you can find me at afrobeets.org. And yeah, that's how you can find me. Let me know if you guys have any questions.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Sustaining with Shayna. You can now listen to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Anchor.fm, and many other platforms. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast and, of course, leave a review or comment. To follow us on Facebook or Instagram, go to sustainingwithshayna.com. Also, what you read and listen to here on the platform was carefully created and curated content made just for you, the listeners. Any generous donations can help to keep me supplying you with great content. Just go to Sustaining with Shayna's website. Click on the donate page to donate. Glad you're here. Thanks a million for listening.